And even as he dreamed, Arthas felt the horror descend upon him as he urged Invincible to make the fatal jump. The anguish, not in the slightest abated by the fact that this was a mere dream, and he knew it as such, ripped through him yet again. And again, he drew his sword and stabbed his devoted friend through his heart. But this time, he realized that he was holding a completely different sword than the simple basic weapon he had held at that dreadful moment. This time, the sword was huge, two-handed, beautifully fashioned. Runes glowed along its length. Cool blue mist wafted from it, cold as the snow in which Invincible lay. And when he withdrew the sword, Arthas did not find himself staring at a slain beast. Instead, Invincible wickered and leaped to his feet, completely healed, somehow stronger than before. He seemed to glow now, his coat radiant rather than merely white, and Arthas bolted upright from where he had fallen asleep over the maps, tears in his eyes and a sob of joy on his lips. Surely this was an omen. The morning dawned frigid and gray, and he was up before first light, eager to begin combing the land for signs of the Dreadlord. He was here. Arthas knew it. But that first day, they found nothing more than a few pockets of undead. As the days passed, with more and more territory charted, Arthas' spirits started to sink. Intellectually, he realized that Northrend was a vast continent, barely explored. Mal'Ganis was a dreadlord, yes, and the clusters of undead they had found thus far would likely be a good indicator of his presence. But not the only one. He could be anywhere or nowhere. This whole revelation that he would be in Northrend could have been nothing more than an elaborate trick to get Arthas out of his way, so that the demon could move somewhere else entirely and— No. That way lay madness. The Dreadlord was arrogant, certain he would eventually best the human prince. Arthas had to believe he was here. Had to. Of course, that could also mean that Jaina had been right, that Mal'Ganis was indeed here and had laid a trap for him. None of these thoughts was pleasant, and the more Arthas chewed on them, the more agitated he became. It was well into the second week of searching before Arthas found anything to offer him hope. They had marched off in a different direction after the initial pair of scouts returned bearing news of large clusters of undead. They found the reported undead lying in pieces on the frozen earth. Before Arthas could even form a thought, he and his men had come under fire. "Take cover!" Arthas cried, and they dove for whatever they could find, tree, rock, even snowbanks. Almost as soon as it had started, the attack ceased, and a shout rang out.
"Bloody hell! You're not undead! You're all alive!"
It was a voice that Arthas recognized and had never thought to encounter in this desolate land. Only one person he knew could swear so enthusiastically, and for a moment, he forgot why he was here, what he was searching for, and felt only delight and fond remembrance of a time long past. Arthas cried in shock and pleasure,
"Muradin Bronzebeard, is that you?"
The stout dwarf stepped out from behind the row of weapons, peering cautiously. The scowl on his face was replaced by an enormous grin.
"Arthas, lad! I never imagined that ye'd be the one to come to our rescue."
He strode forward, his face even more hidden by the bushy beard Arthas remembered from his youth, if such a thing was possible, his eyes more lined but now twinkling with pleasure. He spread his arms, marched up to Arthas, and embraced the prince about the waist. Arthas laughed. Light. It had been so long since he had laughed, and hugged his old friend and trainer back. As they drew apart, the meaning of Muradin's words registered on Arthas. Rescue? Muradin, I didn't even know you were here. I came to— He snapped his mouth closed on the words. He didn't know how Muradin would react yet, and so simply smiled at the dwarf.
That can all wait, he said instead. Come, my old friend.
We've got a base camp set up not too far from here.
Looks like you and your men could use a hot meal.
If you have ale as well,
that'd be a yes from me,
Muradin grinned. There was a celebratory air as Arthas, Muradin, his second-in-command Bailgun, and the other dwarves marched into camp that even managed to take a slight edge off the never-ending cold of the place. Arthas knew that dwarves were used to cold climates and were a solid, strong people, but he noted the looks of relief and gratitude that flitted across the bearded faces as they were handed bowls of steaming hot stew. It was difficult, but Arthas bit his tongue against the questions that wanted to come pouring out of him until Muradin and his men were taken care of. He then beckoned Muradin to join him a ways away from the center of the camp, near where his own personal tent was set up.
So, he said, as his former trainer began shoveling hot food down with the regularity and seemingly unstoppable quality of a well-built gnomish machine. What were you doing up here, anyway?
Muradin swallowed his bite of food and reached for some ale to wash it down with.
Well, lad, this isn't necessarily something to be sharing with everyone.
Arthas nodded his understanding. Only a few of the members of the fleet he'd commandeered knew the whole story of why they were in Northrend.
I appreciate your trusting me, Muradin.
The dwarf clapped him on the shoulder.
You've grown up right bonny, you have, lad. If you can find your way to this forsaken land, you've a right to know what me and my men are doing here. I'm looking for a legend.
His eyes twinkled as he gulped some ale, wiped his mouth, and continued.
My people have always been interested in rare items. You ken that.
Indeed. Arthas recalled hearing something about Muradin helping to form something called the Explorers League. It was based in Ironforge, and its members traveled the world to gather knowledge and search for archaeological treasures.
So, you're on league business here.
Aye, indeed. I've been here many times before.
Oddly compelling land, this one. Doesn't give up its secrets easily, and that makes it intriguing.
He fished in his pack and came out with a leather-bound journal that looked like it had seen better days, and shoved it at Arthas with a grunt. The prince took it and began to thumb through the pages. There were hundreds of sketches of creatures, landmarks, and ruins.
There's more here than meets the eye at first glance.
Looking at the images, Arthas was forced to agree.
Most of the time, it's just research,
Muradin continued. Learning. Arthas closed the book and gave it back to Muradin.
When you saw us, you were surprised. Not that we were undead, but that we weren't. How long have you been here? And what is it you've learned?
Muradin scraped the last bit of stew from his bowl, wiped it clean with a hunk of bread, and ate that as well. He sighed a little.
Ah, I do miss the pastries your palace baker used to make.
He fished for his pipe.
And in answer to your question, long enough to know that something is amiss here. There's some force growing. It's bad, and it's getting badder. I talked to your father. I think this power is no happy with just sitting here in Northrend.
Arthas fought back a double rush of both worry and excitement, trying to appear composed.
You think it might pose a danger to my people?
Muradin leaned back and lit the pipe. The smell of his preferred tobacco, its familiarity comforting in this alien land, teased Arthas's nostrils.
Aye, I do. I think it's part of the creation of these pesky undead.
Arthas decided it was time to share what he knew. He spoke quickly but calmly, telling Muradin about the plagued grain, about Kel'Thuzad and the cult of the damned, and his own first horrifying encounter with the transformed farmers, about learning that Mal'Ganis, a dreadlord in the flesh, was the one behind the plague, and about the demon's taunting invitation to come here, to Northrend. He mentioned Stratholme obliquely. The plague had reached even there, he said. I made sure that Mal'Ganis had no more corpses to use for his own sick purposes. That was enough. It was all true, and he was not certain that Muradin would understand the awful necessity of what Arthas had been forced to do. Jaina and Uther certainly hadn't, and they'd actually seen what Arthas had been up against. Muradin grunted. Bad business, that.
Perhaps this certain artifact I'm looking for can be of use to you in fighting this dreadlord. As far as rare and magical things go, this one's a beaut. Information about it has only recently begun to surface, but ever since we learned about it, while we've been looking long and hard, have a few special magical items to try and track it down, but no luck yet.
He lifted his eyes from Arthas and looked beyond the prince toward the wilderness that loomed. For a moment, the twinkle in his eyes abated, replaced by a somberness that the more youthful Arthas had never seen there. Arthas waited, burning with curiosity, but not wanting to appear the impatient child Muradin no doubt remembered him as being. Muradin refocused, regarding Arthas intently. We are searching for a rune blade. Called Frostmourne. Frostmourne. Arthas felt a slight shiver in his soul at the word. An ominous name for a weapon of legend. Rune blades were not unheard of, but they were extremely rare and terribly powerful weapons. He glanced over at his hammer, sitting propped up against a tree where he'd placed it, after returning from his discovery of Muradin. It was a beautiful weapon, and he had cherished it, although recently the light seemed to shine from it sluggishly, sometimes not at all. But a rune blade. A sudden certainty seized him, as if fate were whispering in his ear. Northrend was a vast place. Surely it was not coincidence that he had encountered Muradin. If he had Frostmourne, surely he could slay Mal'Ganis, end this plague, save his people. The dwarf and he had come together for a reason. It was destiny at work. Muradin was speaking, and Arthas jerked his attention back to him.
We came here to recover Frostmourne, but the closer we come to doing so, the more undead we encounter. And I'm too old to think that mere coincidence.
Arthas smiled softly. So, Muradin, too, did not believe in coincidence. The certainty inside his gut grew. You think Mal'Ganis doesn't want us to find it, Arthas murmured.
I wouldn't think that he'd be happy to see you charging at him with that kind of weapon in your fist. That's true enough.
It sounds like we can help each other, then, Arthas said. We'll help you and your league find Frostmourne, and you can help us against Mal'Ganis. A sound plan, Muradin agreed, the smoke writhing up about him in fragrant blue-black plumes.
Arthas, me lad. Any more of that ale available?
The days passed. Muradin and Arthas compared notes. They had a double quest now, Mal'Ganis and the rune blade. Eventually, they decided that the wisest course of action would be to press inward and send the fleet northward to establish a new camp there. They found themselves fighting not only undead, but famished and vicious packs of wolves, strange beings that seemed to be part wolverine and part human, and a race of trolls that seemed as at home here in the frigid north as their cousins did in the steamy jungles of Stranglethorn. Muradin was not as surprised as the human prince to find such beings. Apparently, small clusters of similar so-called ice trolls lurked near the dwarven capital of Ironforge. Arthas learned from Muradin that the undead had bases here, strange, ziggurat-like structures pulsing with dark magic that had belonged to an older and presumably extinct race, since the former residents didn't seem to object. So, not only did the walking corpses themselves need to be destroyed, their refuges needed to be as well. Yet each day seemed to bring Arthas no nearer to his goal. There were plenty of traces of Mal'Ganis's evil, but none of the Dreadlord himself. Nor was Muradin's quest for the enticing Frostmourne more successful. The clues, arcane and mundane both, were narrowing the search area. But thus far, the Runeblade remained only a legend for all the reality it held for them. The day when things changed, Arthas was in a foul temper. He was returning to their makeshift traveling camp, hungry and tired and cold, after yet another fruitless foray. So lost in his irritation was he that it was several seconds before comprehension dawned. The guards were not at their posts. What the? He turned to look at Muradin, who immediately gripped his axe. There were no bodies, of course. If the undead had attacked while he was away, the corpses would have been raised in the cruelest example of conscription the world had ever known. But there should have been blood, signs of a struggle. But there was none. They advanced cautiously, quietly. The camp was deserted, packed up even, save for a handful of men. They looked up as Arthas entered and saluted him. In answer to his unvoiced question, one of the ship's captains said, "Apologies, my lord. Your father had our troops recalled at Lord Uther's request. The expedition is cancelled." A muscle twitched near Arthas's eye. "My father recalled my troops. Because Lord Uther told him to?" The captain looked nervous and glanced sideways at Muradin, then replied, "Aye, sir. We wanted to wait for you, but the emissary was quite insistent. All the men headed northwest to meet up with the fleet. Our scout informed us that the roads, such as they are being held by the undead, so they're busy clearing a path through the woods. I'm sure you'll be able to catch up with them quickly, sir." "Of course," Arthas said, and forced a smile. Inwardly, he was seething. "Excuse me a moment." He dropped a hand on Muradin's shoulder and steered the dwarf off to an area where they could speak quietly.
"Eh, I'm sorry, lad. It's frustrating to have to pick up and—"
"No." Muradin blinked.
"Come again."
"I'm not going back." "Muradin, if my warriors abandon me, I'll never defeat Mal'Ganis. That plague won't ever stop." Despite himself, his voice rose at the last word, and a few curious glances were thrown his way.
"Lad, it's your father, the king. You can't countermand an order. That's treason."
Arthas snorted. "Perhaps it is my father who is turning traitor to his own people," he thought, but did not say. "I stripped Uther of his rank. I dissolved the order. He's got no right to do this. Father has been deceived."
"Well then, you'll have to take it up with him when you get back. Make him see reason, if it's all as you say it is. But you canna disobey."
Arthas shot the dwarf a harsh glance. "If it's all as I say it is?" What? Was the damned dwarf implying that Arthas was lying to him? "You're right about one thing. My men are loyal to what they understand as the chain of command. They'd never refuse to go home if they had direct orders." He rubbed his chin thoughtfully and smiled as the idea took shape. "That's it. We'll simply deny them the way to get home. They won't be disobeying. They'll simply be unable to obey." Muradin's bushy brows drew together in a frown.
What are you saying?
For answer, Arthas gave him a wolfish grin and told him his plan. Muradin seemed shocked.
Isn't that a bit much, lad?
Muradin's tone told him that he thought it was indeed a bit much. Perhaps a whole hell of a lot more than a bit. Arthas ignored him. Muradin hadn't seen what he had seen, hadn't been forced to do what he had done. He would understand soon enough, when they finally faced Mal'Ganis. Arthas knew that he would defeat the Dreadlord. He had to. He would end the plague, end the threat to his people. Then, the destruction of the vessels would be nothing more than an inconvenience, comparatively minor, when measured against the survival of the citizens of Lordaeron. I know it sounds drastic, but it has to be this way. It has to. A few hours later, Arthas stood on the Forgotten Shore and watched his entire fleet burn. The answer had been simple. The men could not take the ships home, could not abandon him, if there were no ships to take. And so, Arthas had burned them all. He had cut through the woods, hiring mercenaries first to help them slaughter the undead, and then to douse the wooden vessels liberally with oil and set them aflame. In this land of constant cold and feeble light, the heat coming off the fiery vessels was disconcertingly welcome. Arthas lifted his hand to shield his eyes from the brightness. Beside him, Muradin sighed and shook his head. He and the other dwarves, who muttered under their breaths as they watched the conflagration, were still not certain this was the right path. Arthas folded his arms, his back cold, his face and front almost scorched with the heat, solemnly watching the flaming skeleton of one of the ships crack apart with a whoomph. "Damn Uther for making me do this," he murmured. He would show the paladin, the former paladin. He would show Uther and Jaina and his father. He had not shirked his duty, no matter how awful or brutal it was. He would return triumphant, having done what needed to be done, things that the softer-hearted had cringed from doing. And because of him, because of his willingness to shoulder the burden of responsibility, his people would survive. So loud was the sound of flames licking at the oil-drenched wood that for a moment it drowned out the despairing cries of the men as they emerged and beheld the sight.
"Prince Arthas! Our ships!
What happened? How are we getting home?"
The idea had been simmering in the back of his mind for several hours now. Arthas knew his men would be aghast at discovering that they were stranded here. They had agreed to follow him, true, but Muradin had been right. They would have seen orders from his father as superseding any order he could give them, and Mal'Ganis would have won. But they would not understand how very badly they needed to stop the threat here, now. His eyes fell on the mercenaries he had hired. No one would miss them. They could be bought and sold. If someone had paid them to kill him, they would have done so as readily as helping him. So many had died. Good people. Noble people. Innocents. Their senseless deaths cried out to be avenged. And if Arthas's men were not with him with all their hearts, he would not triumph. Arthas could not bear it.
"Quickly, my warriors!" he cried, lifting his hammer.
It did not glow with the light. He was starting to cease expecting it to. He pointed at the mercenaries just now dragging the small boats filled with supplies ashore from the burning ships.
"These murderous creatures have burned our ships and robbed you of your way home. Slay them all, in the name of Lordaeron!"
And he led the charge. Chapter 15. Arthas recognized the sound of Muradin's short but heavy stride, even before the dwarf yanked the tent flap back and glared at him. They stared at each other for a long moment, then Muradin jerked his head toward the outside and let the flap fall. For a moment, Arthas was hurtled back in time to when he was a child, accidentally flinging a training sword across the room. He frowned and rose, following Muradin to an area far away from the men. The dwarf didn't mince words.
"You lied to your men and betrayed the mercenaries who fought for ye," Muradin snapped, shoving his face up to Arthas's as best he could from his much shorter height. "That's nae the lad I trained. That's nae the man who was inducted into the Order of the Silver Hand. That's not King Tyrannus's boy."
"I am no one's boy," Arthas spat, shoving Muradin away. "I did what I deemed necessary."
He half expected Muradin to strike him, but instead the anger seemed to bleed away from his old trainer.
"What's happening to ye, Arthas?"
Muradin said quietly, his voice holding a world of pain and confusion.
"Is vengeance all that's important to ye?"
"Spare me, Muradin," Arthas growled. "You weren't there to see what Mal'Ganis did to my homeland. What he did to innocent men, women, and children."
"I've heard what you did," Muradin said quietly. "Some of your men have been a wee bit free with their tongues when ale has loosened them. I know what I think. But I also know that I cannot judge ye. You're right, I wasn't there. Thank the light, I didn't have to make the kind of decision. But even so, something's happening. Ye—"
Mortar fire and cries of alarm interrupted him. In a heartbeat, Muradin and Arthas had their weapons out and had turned back to the encampment. The men were still scrambling for weapons. Falric was barking orders to the humans, while Balegun was organizing the dwarves. There came the sound of engagement from outside the encampment, and Arthas could see the press of undead closing in. His hands clenched on his hammer. This had all the earmarks of a coordinated attack, rather than a random encounter.
"The Dark Lord said you would come," came a voice that was by now familiar to Arthas.
Elation filled him. Mal'Ganis was here. It had not been a wild goose chase after all.
"This is where your journey ends, boy. Trapped and freezing at the roof of the world, with only death to sing the tale of your doom."
Muradin scratched his beard, his sharp eyes darting about. Outside the perimeter of the camp came the sounds of battle.
"This looks bad," he admitted, with characteristic dwarven understatement. "We're completely surrounded."
Arthas stared, agonized.
"We could have done it," he whispered. "With Frostmourne, we could have done it."
Muradin glanced away. "Well, lad, I have been having me doubts about the sword, and to speak truly, about ye as well."
It took a second for Arthas to realize what Muradin was saying.
Are you telling me you've figured out how to find it?"
At Muradin's nod, Arthas seized him by the arm.
"Whatever your doubts, Muradin, you can't possibly have them now. Not with Mal'Ganis right here. If you know where it is, then take me to it. Help me claim Frostmourne.
You said it yourself. You didn't think that Mal'Ganis would like to see me with Frostmourne in my fist.
Mal'Ganis has more troops than we do. Without Frostmourne, we'll fall. You know we will."
Muradin gave him an agonized look, then closed his eyes.
"I have a bad feeling about this, lad.
It's why I've no pressed on before. Something about this artifact, how the information has come. It does not feel right. But I promised I'd see this through. Ye go gather a few men, and I'll find ye that rune blade."
Arthas clapped his old friend on the shoulder. This was it.
"I'll get that damned rune blade, and I'll shove it through your black heart, Dreadlord. I'll make you pay."
"Close that gap over there," Falric was shouting. "Davin, fire!"
The boom of mortar fire echoed through the camp as Arthas raced toward his second-in-command.
Captain Falric!
Falric turned to him.
Sir, we're utterly surrounded. We can hold out for a while, but eventually they're going to wear us down. Who, what, we lose in numbers, they'll gain.
I know, Captain. Myrdan and I are going to find Frostmourne. Falric's eyes widened slightly in both shock and hope. Arthas had shared the knowledge of the sword and its supposed vast power with a few of his most trusted men. Once we have it, victory will be certain. Can you buy us the time?
Aye, Your Highness.
Falric grinned, but he still looked worried even as he said, We'll hold these undead bastards off. A few moments later, Myrdan, armed with a map and a strange, glowing object, joined Arthas and a handful of men. His mouth was etched in a frown, and his eyes were unhappy, but his body was straight. Falric gave the signal and began to create a distraction. Most of the undead suddenly turned and concentrated their efforts on him, leaving the back area of the camp open.
Let's go, Arthas said grimly.
Myrdan barked out directions as he alternately peered at his map and at the glowing object that seemed to pulse erratically. They moved as quickly as possible through the deep snow where he indicated, stopping only occasionally for the briefest of breaks to reassess. The sky darkened as clouds gathered. Snow began to fall, slowing them further. Arthas began to move automatically. The snow made it impossible to see more than a few feet ahead. He no longer noticed or cared in which direction he went, simply moving his legs as he followed Muradin's lead. Time seemed to have no meaning. He could have been moving for minutes or days. His mind was consumed with thoughts of Frostmourne, their salvation. Arthas knew it would be. But could they reach it before his men at the camp fell to the undead and their demonic master? Falric had said they could hold, for a time. How much longer? To finally know that Mal'Ganis was here, at his own base camp, and to not be able to attack was...
There,
Myrdan said, almost reverently, pointing. It's inside, there. Arthas halted, blinking eyes that were narrowed to slits against the driving snow, their lashes crusted with ice. They stood before the mouth of a cavern, stark and ominous-seeming in the snow-swirled darkness of the gray day. There was some kind of illumination inside, a soft, blue-green radiance he could just barely glimpse. Bone-weary, frozen as he was, excitement shot through him. He forced his numbed mouth to form words.
Frostmourne, and the end of Mal'Ganis. The end of the plague. Come on!
A second wind seemed to take him and he hastened forward, forcing his legs to obey.
Lad!
Myrdan's voice brought him up sharply.
So precious a treasure won't be just left sitting around for anyone to find. You must proceed with a bit of caution.
Arthas chafed, but Myrdan had more experience in these matters. So he nodded, gripped his hammer firmly, and entered warily. The immediate relief from the wind and driving snow heartened him, and they moved deeper into the heart of the cavern. The illumination he had glimpsed from outside proved to be coming from softly glowing turquoise crystals and veins of ore embedded in the rock walls, floors, and ceilings themselves. He had heard of such luminescent crystals, and was now grateful for the light they provided. His men would be able to concentrate on holding their weapons, not torches. Once, his hammer would have glowed with enough radiance to guide them. He frowned at the thought, then pushed it down. It did not matter where light to see by came from, only that it was present. It was then that they heard the voices. Myrdan had been right. They were expected. The voices were deep, hollow, and cold-sounding, and their words were dire as they floated to Arthas's ears.
Turn back, mortals.
Death and darkness are all that await you in this forsaken vault.
You shall not pass.
Mirrodin halted. Lad, he said, his voice soft, though in this place it seemed to echo endlessly. Perhaps we should listen.
Listen to what? Arthas cried. A pathetic last effort to turn me from my path to save my people? It's going to take more than ominous words to do that.
Gripping his hammer, he hastened forward, rounded a corner, and stopped in his tracks, trying to take in everything at once. They had found the owners of the icy voices. For a moment, Arthas was reminded of Jaina's obedient water elemental, who had helped her fight off the ogres on that long-ago day, before everything had taken such grim and horrific turns. The beings hovered over the cold stone floor of the cavern, made of ice and unnatural essence instead of water, wearing armor that looked as if it had grown of and from them. They had helms, but no faces, gauntlets, weapons, and shields, but no arms. Alarming though they were, Arthas gave these fearsome elemental spirits no more than a passing glance, as his eye was drawn to the reason they had come here. Frostmourne. It was caught in a hovering, jagged chunk of ice, the runes that ran the length of its blade glowing a cool blue. Below it was a dais of some sort, standing on a large, gently raised mound that was covered in a dusting of snow. A soft light, coming from somewhere high above where the cavern was open to daylight, shone down on the rune blade. The icy prison hid some details of the sword's shape and form, exaggerated others. It was revealed and concealed at the same time, and all the more tempting, like a new lover imperfectly glimpsed through a gauzy curtain. Arthas knew the blade. It was the selfsame sword he had seen in his dream when he first arrived. The sword that had not killed Invincible, but that had brought him back healed and healthy. He'd thought it a good omen then, but now he knew it was a true sign. This was what he had come to find. This sword would change everything. Arthas stared raptly at it, his hands almost physically aching to grasp it, his fingers to wrap themselves around the hilt, his arms to feel the weapon swinging smoothly in the blow that would end Mal'Ganis, end the torment he had visited upon the people of Lordaeron, end this lust for revenge.
Dwan,
he stepped forward. The uncanny elemental spirit drew its icy sword.
Turn away, before it is too late, it intoned.
Still trying to protect the sword, are you? Arthas snarled, angry and embarrassed at his reaction.
No.
The being's voice rumbled the word.
Trying to protect you from it.
For a second, Arthas stared in surprise. Then he shook his head, eyes narrowing in determination. This was nothing more than a trick. He could never turn away from Frostmourne, turn away from saving his people. He would not fall for the lie. He charged, and his men followed. The entities converged on them, attacking with their unnatural weapons, but Arthas focused his attention on the leader, the one assigned to guard Frostmourne. All his pent-up hope, worry, fear, and frustration he unleashed on the strange protector. His men did likewise, turning to attack the other elemental guardians of the sword. His hammer rose and fell, shattering the icy armor as cries of anger were ripped from his throat.
How dare this thing stand between him and Frostmourne? How dare it?
With a final agonized sound, like that of the rattle coming from a dying man's throat, the spirit flung up what passed for hands and disappeared. Arthas stood staring, panting, the breath coming from his chilled lips in white puffs. Then he turned to the hard-won prize. All misgivings disappeared as he again laid eyes on the sword.
Behold, Mirrodin, he breathed, aware that his voice was shaking.
Our salvation. Frostmourne. Hold, lad.
Muradin's blunt words, almost an order, were like cold water doused on Arthas. He blinked, startled out of his trance-like rapture, and turned to look at the dwarf.
What? Why?
He demanded. Mirrodin was staring, eyes narrowed, at the hovering sword and the dais below it.
Something's not right here.
He pointed a stubby finger at the rune blade.
This has been too easy. And look at it, sitting here with light coming from who knows where, like a flower, waiting to be plucked.
Too easy.
Arthas shot him a disbelieving glance.
It's taken you long enough to find it, and we had to fight these things to get to it.
Bah, snorted Mirrodin.
Everything I ken about artifacts is telling me that there's something as fishy here as the Booty Bay docks.
He sighed, his brow still furrowed.
Wait, there's an inscription on the dais. Let me see if I can read this. It might tell us something.
Both of them advanced, Mirrodin to kneel and peer at the writing, Arthas to draw closer to the beckoning sword. Arthas gave the inscription that so intrigued Mirrodin a cursory glance. It was not written in any language he knew, but the dwarf seemed to be able to read it, judging by how his eyes flickered across the letters. Arthas lifted a hand and stroked the ice that separated them. Smooth, slick, deathly cold. Ice, yes, but there was something unusual about it. It wasn't simply frozen water. He didn't know how he could tell, but he could. There was something very powerful, almost unearthly about it.
Frostmourne. I thought I recognized this. It's written in Calamag, the elemental language,
Mirrodin continued. He frowned as he read.
It's a warning.
Warning? Warning of what?
Perhaps shattering the ice would damage the sword somehow, Arthas thought. The unnatural ice block itself, though, seemed to have been almost cut from another larger piece of ice. Mirrodin translated slowly. Arthas listened with half an ear, his eyes on the sword.
Whosoever takes up this blade shall wield power eternal. Just as the blade rends flesh, so must power scar the spirit.
The dwarf leaped to his feet, looking more agitated than Arthas had ever seen him.
Ugh, I should have known. The blade is cursed. Let's get the hell out of here.
Arthas's heart gave a strange wrench at Mirrodin's exclamation.
Leave?
Leave this sword behind, hovering in its frozen prison, untouched, unused, with such vast power to offer him? Power eternal, the inscription had promised, along with the threat of scarring the spirit.
My spirit is already scarred, Arthas said.
And so it was. It had been scarred by the needless death of a beloved steed, by the horror of watching the dead rise, by the betrayal of one he loved. Yes, he had loved Jaina Proudmoore. He could say it now, in this moment, where his soul seemed to lie naked in front of the sword's judgment. It had been scarred by being forced to slaughter hundreds, by the need to lie to his men and forever silence those who would question and disobey him. It had been scarred by so very much. Surely the marks left by the power to right a horrible wrong could not be greater than these.
Arthas, lad, Mirrodin said, his rough voice pleading. You've enough to deal with without bringing a curse on your head.
A curse?
Arthas laughed bitterly. I would gladly bear any curse to save my homeland. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Mirrodin shiver.
Arthas, ye ken I'm a solid one, no given to flights of fancy. But I tell ye, this is bad business, lad. Leave it be. Let it stay here, lost and forgotten. Mal'Ganis is here? Well, that's fine. Let him freeze his demonic arse here in the wilderness. Forget this business, and let's lead your men home.
An image of the men suddenly filled Arthas's mind. He saw them, and beside them he saw the hundreds that had already fallen to this horrible plague. Fallen, only to rise, unthinking, rotting hunks of flesh. What of them? What of their souls, their suffering, their sacrifice? Another image appeared, a huge piece of ice, the same ice that now encased Frostmourne. He saw now where this chunk of ice had come from. It was part of something larger, stronger, and it, with the Runeblade inside it, had been somehow sent to him to avenge those who had fallen. A voice whispered in his mind, "The dead demand vengeance." What was a handful of living men compared to the torment of those who had fallen in so horrible a fashion?
"Damn the men!"
The words seemed to explode from someplace deep in his gut.
"I have a duty to the dead. Nothing shall prevent me from having my revenge, old friend."
Now he tore his gaze away from the sword, long enough to meet Muradin's worried gaze, and his face softened slightly. "Not even you."
"Arthas, I taught you to fight. I wanted to help you be a good warrior as well as a good king. But part of being a good warrior is picking which battles to fight and which weapons to fight with."
He stabbed a stubby forefinger at Frostmourne.
"And that's a weapon you'll no want to be putting in your arsenal."
Arthas put both hands up against the ice that was the sword's sheath and brought his face to within an inch of the smooth surface, as if from somewhere far away he heard Muradin still speaking.
"Listen to me, lad. We'll find another way to save your people. Let's leave now. Go back and find that way."
Muradin was wrong. He simply didn't understand. Arthas had to do this. If he walked away now, he would have failed. Again. And he couldn't let that happen. He had been thwarted at every turn. Not this time. He believed in the light, because he could see it and had used it. And he believed in ghosts and the walking dead, because he had fought them. But until this moment, he had scoffed at the idea of unseen powers, of spirits of places or things. But now, his heart racing in anticipation and with a yearning, a craving that seemed to gnaw at his very soul, the words came from his lips as if of their own accord, laced with his dreadful wanting.
"Now I call out to the spirits of this place," he said, his breath frosting in the cold, still air.
Just beyond his reach, Frostmourne hung, suspended, awaiting him.
"Whatever you be, good or ill, or neither or both, I can feel you here. I know you are listening."
"I'm ready. I understand.
And I tell you now, I will give anything or pay any price, if only you will help me save my people."
For a long, terrible moment, nothing happened. His breath frosted, faded, frosted again, and cold sweat dotted his brow. He had offered everything he had. Had he been refused? Had he failed yet again? And then, with a low groan that made his breath catch, a sudden crack ran up the smooth surface of the ice. It raced its way upward, zigzagging and spreading, until Arthas could barely glimpse the sword it held within its heart. Then he was stumbling backward, clutching his ears at the sudden, loud, cracking noise that filled the chamber. The icy casket encasing the sword exploded. Shards flew across the chamber, swords themselves sharp and jagged. They shattered against the unyielding stone floor and walls, but even as Arthas dropped to his knees, his arms flying up automatically to cover his head, he heard a cry suddenly cut off.
"Muradin!"
The impact of the ice shard had knocked the dwarf back several feet. Now he lay sprawled on the cold stone floor, a spear of ice impaling his midsection, the blood sluggishly flowing around it. His eyes were closed, and he was limp. Arthas scrambled to his feet and hastened over to his old friend and trainer, tugging off his gauntlet. He slipped an arm around the limp form, placing his hand on the wound, staring at it, willing the light to come and limn his hands with healing energy. Guilt racked him. So, this was the dreadful price. Not his own life, but that of a friend. Someone who had cared for him, taught him, supported him. He bowed his head, tears stinging his eyes, and prayed. It's my folly, my price. Please. And then, like a familiar caress from a loved friend, he felt it. The light raced through him, comforting and warm. And he bit back a sob as he saw the glow again begin to embrace his hand. He had fallen so far, but it wasn't too late. The light had not abandoned him. All he needed to do was drink it in, open his heart to it. Muradin would not die. He could heal him, and together they... Something stirred at the back of his neck. No, no, not the back of his neck. The back of his mind. He looked up quickly and stared in wonder. It had flung itself free to embed itself in front of him, its blue-white runes enveloping it in a cold and glorious light. His own light faded from his hands as he rose to his feet, almost hypnotized. Frostmourne was waiting for him, a lover needing the touch of the desired one to waken to full glory. The whispering in the back of his mind continued. This was the path. It was foolish to trust in the light. It had failed him repeatedly. It had not been there to save Invincible, had not been enough to stop the inexorable march of this plague that was on its way to wiping out the population of his kingdom. The power, the strength of Frostmourne, that was the only thing that could stand against the might of a dreadlord. Muradin was a casualty of this awful war. But hopefully, his sacrifice would be the last. Arthas got to his feet and took unsteady steps toward the radiant weapon, his hand still wet with the blood of his friend, outstretched and trembling. It closed on the shaft, and his fingers curled around it, fitting it perfectly, as if the one was made for the other. Cold shot through him, shivering up his arms, spreading over his body and into his heart. It was painful for a moment, and he knew a hint of alarm. And then suddenly, it was all right. It was all right. Frostmourne was his, and he was it. And its voice was speaking, whispering, caressing inside his mind as if it had always been there. With a cry of joy, he lifted the weapon, gazing at it in wonder and fierce pride. He would make things right. He, Arthas Menethil, and the glorious Frostmourne that was now as much a part of him as his mind or his heart or his breath, and he listened intently to the secrets it revealed. Chapter 16. Arthas and his men ran toward the encampment to discover that the battle had not abated in his absence. The numbers of his men had dwindled, but there were no corpses. He did not expect to see any. Those who fell rose as adversaries, under the command of the Dreadlord. Falric, his armor spattered with gore, cried out to him. Prince Arthas, we've done what we could, and where's Muradin? We can't hold out any longer. Muradin is dead, Arthas said. The cold but comforting essence of the sword seemed to abate a little, and pain swelled in his heart. Muradin had paid the price, but it was worth it if it would fell Mal'Ganis. The dwarf would have agreed had he known everything, understood, as Arthas understood. Muradin's men looked stricken even as they continued to fire round after round into the waves of undead that continued to pound against them. His death was not in vain. Take heart, Captain. The enemy will not stand long against the might of Frostmourne. As they watched disbelief washing over their faces, Arthas charged into the fray. He had thought he fought well with his blessed hammer, now lying discarded and forgotten in the icy vault where Frostmourne had once been imprisoned. But it was nothing to the damage he dealt now. Frostmourne felt more like an extension of himself rather than a weapon. He quickly found a rhythm and began to slice the undead down as if they were so many stalks of grain falling before the harvesting scythe. How balanced and perfect a weapon it was in his hands. One arcing blow severed the head from the shoulders of a ghoul. He swept Frostmourne around, scattering the bones of a skeleton. Another rhythmic stroke downed a third foe. They fell all around him, the rotting bodies beginning to pile up as he cut a path through them. At one point, looking for his next enemy, he caught sight of Falric staring at him. There was awe on the familiar face, but also shock and horror. Only at the carnage he was wreaking, surely. Frostmourne was all but singing in his hands. The wind picked up and the snow began to fall thick and fast. Frostmourne seemed to approve, for the increased snowfall did not seem to hamper Arthas in the slightest. Again and again the blade found its mark, and more undead things fell. At last, the minions had been dealt with. It was time for their master.
"Mal'Ganis, you coward!" Arthas cried, even his voice sounding different in his own ears now as it carried easily over the howling wind. "Come show yourself! You taunted me into coming here. Now stand and face me."
And then the demon lord was there, bigger than Arthas remembered, smirking down at the prince. He straightened to his full imposing height, his wings beating the air, his tail lashing. The undead warriors at his command stilled as he casually flicked a finger. Arthas was prepared for the dreadlord's frightening appearance this time. It did not rattle him. Staring at his enemy, he wordlessly lifted Frostmourne, and the runes etched along its length gleamed. Mal'Ganis recognized the weapon, and a hint of a frown curved his blue lips. "So, you've taken up Frostmourne at the expense of your comrades' lives, just as the Dark Lord said you would. You're stronger than I thought." The words were heard, but there were other words, whispering silkily in his brain. Arthas listened, and then grinned fiercely.
"You waste your breath, Mal'Ganis. I heed only the voice of Frostmourne now."
The dreadlord threw back his horned head and laughed.
"You hear the voice of the Dark Lord," Mal'Ganis retorted.
He pointed a sharp, black-nailed finger at the mighty rune blade.
"He whispers to you through the blade you wield."
Arthas felt the blood drain from his face. The dreadlord's master spoke to him through Frostmourne? But how could that be? Was this the final trick? Had he been gulled and delivered directly into Mal'Ganis's taloned hands?
"What does he say, young human?"
The smirk came again, the expression of one who knows something another does not. The dreadlord was gloating, reveling in this twist.
"What does the Dark Lord of the Dead tell you now?"
The whispers came again, but this time it was Arthas who smirked, a mirror image of the same expression the dreadlord wore. Now it was he who knew something Mal'Ganis did not. Arthas whirled Frostmourne over his head, the enormous blade light and graceful in his hands, and then he eased into an attack position.
"He tells me that the time for my vengeance has come."
The green, glowing eyes widened.
"What?
He can't possibly mean to..." Arthas charged. The mighty rune blade lifted, descended. The dreadlord was taken by surprise, but only for an instant, and managed to get his staff up in time to deflect the blow. He leaped aside, great bat wings creating a quick gust of wind that blew Arthas's golden hair about wildly, but did not affect his balance or speed. He came in again and again, coldly in control, but swift and deadly as a viper, the blade glowing with eagerness. A brief thought crossed his mind. Frostmourne hungers. And a part of him responded with a frisson of fear. Hungers. For what?